Welcome to The Daily Stoic, where each day we read a short passage designed to help you cultivate the strength, insight, wisdom necessary for living the good life. Each one of these passages is based on the 2,000-year-old philosophy that has guided some of history's greatest men and women. For more, you can visit us at dailystoic.com. The Daily Stoic is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. One of the cool things about podcasts is that you can multitask while you're listening, but depending on what you're doing right now, like for instance, if you're not in some kind of moving vehicle, there's something else you could be doing. You could be getting an auto quote from Progressive Insurance. It's easy and you could save money by doing it right from your phone. Drivers who save by switching to Progressive save nearly $700 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts, discounts for having multiple vehicles on your policy, being a homeowner, and more. So just like your favorite podcast, Progressive will be with you 24/7, 365 days a year, so you're protected no matter what. Multitask right now. Quote your car insurance at progressive.com to join over 29 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $698 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations. Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. We push what technology can do so great ideas can happen now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Daily Stoic Podcast. Obviously, one of the perks of having the podcast, but also just being a writer, is you get to meet people you admire, people whose work you love. I think if you'd been talking to a 12-year-old version of me, they would have not believed so many of the things about my life would even be possible. But this one, they probably wouldn't believe at all. I remember probably around age 12, I remember I saved up my money and I bought a stereo for my room. And I had the ability, this is very long time ago for some listeners, I'm sure, but you would listen to songs on the radio and you would put a tape in the tape deck. And if you hit the record and the play button, you could record things off the radio. And I remember I recorded a song by the band MXPX, I'm Okay, You're Okay, which I think was their biggest hit to date. And I just love this song. And I remember I'd heard it a couple times, but I'd never caught it right at the beginning. And I finally got it just in time to record it. And I would listen to this song all the time. And then I bought the album when it came out. I remember actually even the first album that I ever bought on Amazon, the first thing that I ever bought on Amazon, which I bought with a gift card, was their next album, The Ever Passing Moment. And the first concert that I ever went to was an MXPX show in Modesto, California in, I guess it'd be September or October 2001. And I still have the t-shirt and it still fits. And I wore it a few days ago. So my guest today actually is Mike Herrera, an amazing musician, the founding member and songwriter of MXPX. He's also the bassist in a band called Goldfinger. He's got a bunch of awesome side projects he's done over the years that I also like, including the band Arthur. And he had a country band called Tumbledown. MXPX is a pop punk band. They do a lot of great acoustic stuff too. They've just been kind of a soundtrack to my life over the years, and God knows how much time I've spent listening to their music. I remember one time I was watching the Super Bowl as a kid, and they were in a Super Bowl commercial, and I just thought, holy shit, this is amazing. And I ended up meeting Mike when I was writing Perennial Cellar. MXPX is a band that has been now a band for 30 years. They've had their ups and downs, and I wanted to look at how an artist weathers just the realities of something as difficult as the music business, comes out of the other side, does great work. And I got to meet Mike, and I've been to a couple shows since then, which has been cool. Anyways, today's guest is Mike Herrera. We have a great conversation, probably even more unbelievable to me as a 12-year-old, is that Mike's wife, Holly, and my wife, Samantha, are friends. Things I could not have conceived of as a kid, certainly. But life is weird, man. And if you ever watched the show Fixer Upper, Mike and his wife Holly were on the finale of that show. They built a really cool house. Chip and Joanna Gaines remodeled an incredible house for them in Waco, Texas. So we've gotten to see Mike and Holly quite a bit. So I wanted to have this conversation. And Mike and MXPX are crushing it. Actually, their new song, Let's Ride, is one I've listened to a bunch of times. Just check it out. And I think Mike says in the interview, it's in the new Tony Hawk Pro Skater game, a bunch of other stuff. So great band. Follow them on Instagram. Follow them on Spotify. Buy their stuff. See them live when live music comes back. And I hope this is an interesting interview. And it certainly was a treat for me. And I'm glad to share it with you. Well, it must be strange for you, right? Because although obviously I hit the road a fair amount for what I do, for a musician, like it's all about the road.
Yeah, it is about the road. But it's also, you know, for me, the last 5 years, really, it's been about the road. But I haven't been touring full time. It's been a lot of weekends, a lot of big events, a lot of fly out shows and stuff like that. So this really hasn't. I mean, it has, but it hasn't really ended everything we've been doing because we kind of switched over 5 years ago, right? So it's kind of, I guess, lucky, serendipitous, whatever you might say, for the position that I'm in, not having to be constantly touring.
You don't have like a huge machine that you have to keep in perpetual motion or it all comes crashing down.
Right, exactly. I mean, here's the thing is, like, don't get me wrong, most of our money was made in playing shows and playing live and touring. But over the past 5 years, we really have kind of started focusing on a lot of the other revenue streams that were not really available to musicians back in the day when we first started out. And I guess what I'm talking about is regular streaming services for music. That's really changed the whole landscape of the music business. Now there's plenty of people that are still mad, right? But
sure.
It's just like we're finally moving in the direction where independent musicians, independent artists can really just do whatever they want. And you kind of, you know, what I've experienced is the amount of work I put into something is usually the amount of success I get back.
Do you miss that connection with the crowd? So when I'm saying it's sort of all about the road, I don't just mean financially. I think part of it is like you make this stuff. Like I'm in the middle of just putting this book out. It's a weird experience to be, and I know you put it out an album somewhat recently. It's like you put this thing out in the world, and part of the, not the rush, but just your sense of like whether it worked or not is like meeting and experiencing it landing with like human beings in the same room.
Yeah, that is definitely a huge part of it. And it's something that I have had to almost train my mind to just not worry about or not think about. And even when it was a thing, I think, I guess the parallel would be kind of social media, right? And just looking, it's similar to that, where you're looking for other people's approval. And certainly we want to make people happy. We're out there for the fans. But at the beginning, when I'm alone in my room, I really can't be thinking about fans. I'm thinking about this song. This is it. And then,
sure.
And of course the thinking changes as I bring it to the guys, the band, and we work through it. We may be thinking, okay, how is this going to translate to an audience? But I really try to train myself not to worry or think about that, at least at the beginning stages, because I don't want it to taint or change what I'm writing.
That makes sense. I mean, I've always wondered that, obviously, with writers, there's a little bit of it. Like, I know writers that are just sort of total road warriors and they're like doing multiple talks a week. But I've always wondered, like, on some of these older bands that have, you know, made hundreds of millions, if not in some cases billions of dollars touring over the years, like, why are they still doing it at 60, 70 plus years old? Is the rush of the crowd almost like your point about trying not to think too much about what the fans think? Is it almost like an addiction, like the adoration, the rush of like the crowd? Is that what keeps people going to a certain degree?
Oh, certainly, certainly. I mean, that's the thing is, like, I guess I'm kind of talking about two different things when I talk about creating the music.
Sure.
But then you going out and performing the music, that's a whole different thing. That's like, you can perform somebody else's song you didn't even write and take it and make it your own and make it something that the crowd loves. So So yeah, I mean, as far as why do these musicians or artists, these touring type people, just keep going? Like Tom Petty literally toured until he died, and he was one of my favorites. And I heard that, and I was like, you know, to be honest, it's not a bad way to go. You know, just touring until you die. But I think what it is honestly, it's like with anything you find in your life that connects you to happiness, connects you to feeling alive, connects you to feeling worth, having a self-worth. That's touring, really. It's like the highs and lows of that, you know, because you're spending a ton of time, downtime, where you have a lot of time to do nothing or to do everything. You know, it could be destructive, it could be very productive. And that's, I think, a lot of reasons why a lot of people get into drugs and alcohol. It's because there's literally nothing else to do and you're just going crazy. A lot like people in the pandemic and the lockdown. But
oh, I get what you're saying. You're like, you're pinging back and forth between like boredom and the racing thoughts of your mind and just all your issues. And then for an hour a night, you're like a god in front of people. And then you have to go right back to the loneliness of the bus, that up and down. Is that just really hard?
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely what I'm saying. And it's crazy when you get, like, when I personally am like about to hit the stage, I'm not necessarily nervous, like, oh, I'm going to screw up or I can't do this. It's a nervous energy. Certainly it's an anxiousness, and everybody kind of experiences their own version of that. But for me, I'm excited and I'm nervous and I'm a little worried. I was like, you know, just cause I've always felt like you have one chance every night to go out and prove yourself, you know? So like, to me, that hour or, you know, 2 hours on stage is the height of like your everything you can feel, right? And at the same time, you're not really thinking too hard because you're just in it. So it goes by fairly quickly. I mean, obviously there's times where like you could be thinking about what you had for dinner earlier that day and be out of your head and out of the show. But for the most part, when it's going well, that is the best, you know, couple hours of your day. And the pinging back and forth, yeah, really, really can be hard. But I think these days, some people have figured it out. You know, back in the day when I was touring, you know, when I was 24, 25, like in those years, my early 20s, I didn't think of my time as being as valuable. You know, it was just more about let's get to the show and everything. And still today, I have a part of that I've still brought with me where everything, if I have a show that day, that's the most important thing happening. So I'll still have things that I do during the day, but it's all geared towards putting on a good show, whether it's physically putting on a good show and mentally. So that hasn't changed, but just the whole idea of we don't need to spend basically every day out on the road.
Right.
There's other things you can do to build what you're doing. And so, yeah, that's changed huge.
I know what you mean, though. Like one of the benefits of like sort of the speaking that authors do is most of the talk, if not all of it, is in the morning. So you get to like get it out of the way. At like, you know, sometimes I've done talks at like 7 a.m. So on the one hand, you have to get up early and you have to find some way to pump yourself up. Usually I go for a run or something. But the nice part is then it's over. You know, like I don't have to, when I have a talk that's at 7 p.m, that day is like a weird loss day. Although I even find sometimes after the gig, it's like the energy that you've picked up from the crowd and the weird, almost like egotistical place you have to go to perform. It's hard to come down from that and like sort of re-enter normal life.
That is so true. And so waiting around all day is hard for one, because like usually around 4 o'clock, in the afternoon, I'm like, I wish we were just playing right now. I wish we just right. Let's go. We're ready to go. You know, like that would be perfect for me because I could, you know, then in a perfect world, I could like sleep in a little bit and not even work. Like there's no reason you have to get up, but okay, maybe set an alarm just in case, you know, that kind of thing to get the sound check. But it's kind of a slow moving day for me. And then once the show is going, it goes really quickly. when it's leading up to the show, once you're at the show, even after the show, you're sort of like coming down, you've got all this energy, this, and it takes a little while, like you're awake, but then once you lose that, I get really sleepy. And, yeah. And it's funny because like, sometimes I'll do like private parties. And in the past I've shown up to a party where it's just like a group of people and I'm playing acoustic, not the full band. And they'll be like, "Hey, do you want some food?" And at first I would be like, "No, I'm good. I'll eat after." And I quickly realized, one, all the food's gone by the time you're done playing. And two, I'm just so starved by the time, you know, and so if the food is gone, you're out of luck. So I started changing my mindset to be like, you know what? I need this food. And so when people would ask me, I would say yes right away. And I would just dive in and I'm just like stuffing my face in front of these strangers. And then I go up and play a show. And I've felt so much better since then. So there's little things that I still That's pick really up interesting. And learn. Yeah.
I gave a talk at the NFL owners meeting. I guess it was 2 years ago. There was five speakers, I think. I was the last one. We were each speaking for like roughly 10 minutes. So they were like, okay, all the speakers will sit in the front row. I was the last one. And I was like, you got to be out of your mind if you think I can sit here in a chair for an hour watching the other speakers from the front row. I was like, you guys are great, but like, I don't think you're understanding the energy that begins to sort of course through one's body and like the mental place you have to get to be able to perform. I was like, I'm going to have to find a way that you can let me pace in the lobby because I'm going to walk like a few miles walking back and forth over the next 50 or so minutes, probably listening to music. I've noticed because I've come to a couple of your shows and I've seen you beforehand, it feels like you have to, you kind of got to get yourself into a zone where you can then be in that place where it goes by like that.
You know, what's funny is I'm super weird at shows and it is sometimes hard to like bring guests out and then you have to like, hey, what's up? How you doing? And you've been very gracious and very cool and patient because you've had to wait for a little while, a few times, but it is weird because I really, and I've seen other artists do this, not just me, something akin to what a boxer does. You know, I always wondered when I'd see boxers come out first round sweating and you're like,
right. What were you doing?
I was asking my dad, why are they sweating already? Like, he's like, well, cause they warmed up, they got ready to go. They're in fighting shape. And it makes sense now that I do, you know, something fairly physical with my act, which is jumping around on stage and singing and playing, but I have to mentally and physically kind of get into fighting shape, you know, stretch the whole nine yards. And back in the day, it was very, very not punk, not cool to be seen stretching and to be seen doing like jumping jacks or anything like that. But, you know, of course, as we went on tours, opened for bands that had been around longer than us, we'd watch them and they would be wearing tennis shoes. They would be stretching. We're like, oh, okay, huh. Maybe there's something to that whole physical, get your body ready thing.
It's so funny you say that because I noticed you used to wear, like with the first show I ever saw you in and for everything I'd ever seen you in, you were always in Converse All-Stars and you're not wearing those anymore when you're on stage because that's got to be like the worst athletic shoe you could imagine.
Yeah, it's like wearing like cardboard on your feet. It's good. But yeah, I mean, many years went by. And I remember there was a few Warped Tours where we were out on this metal stage. The first couple of years we played Warped Tour in the U.S. And it was so hot out in Oklahoma, out in the Midwest, that if you stood long enough on one spot, your feet would literally start sticking and melting to the stage. So yeah, I had some Converse that got a little sticky. That's not why I switched though.
Sure. No, that's hilarious. Well, and actually this is probably an urban legend, but I heard that Converse have that weird fuzziness on the bottom. So like for an import purpose, they're like taxed as slippers, not as shoes. They probably, if you ever noticed that, they have that like softness on the bottom. Maybe that's why they were sticking.
I never noticed that, to be honest.
It's weird.
I never heard of that legend.
So I was thinking back when I was prepping for this, I was thinking back to the very first show that very first MXPX show I ever went to. It was in Modesto. And I know it was in either late September or early October because it was right after 9/11. And I remember I was in high school, but I remember the idea being, was there ever going to be, were all events going to be canceled? Was it going to be safe to get together in people as in groups of people anymore? Of course, in retrospect, it's preposterous that like a punk show in Modesto, California would be a terrorist target. But there was that weird sense of like, something has changed and we don't know what life is ever going to look like again. It's interesting how quickly that recedes into memory and life does resume. That's something I've been thinking a lot about with the pandemic. Like, I don't remember when it switched over, but eventually it did switch over. And we have to remember that that will happen again.
Yeah, that'll happen. And, you know, our memories are kind of weird, or at least mine's terrible. But I have a way of just making things a little better, right? Like, it's like, oh, that wasn't so bad. Now that we're through it, that wasn't so bad. So I think we all do that in a lot of ways. But thinking back to 9/11, that was, I mean, everybody's got their story, but we basically were supposed to leave that day to fly. And so I got a call from our merch guy across town. He's like, pick up, you know, turn on CNN. And I turned it on and there it is. And so we're like, we're not going anywhere. It was a week. We skipped a couple shows. We moved some things around. We didn't fly. We rented two minivans. If you can imagine, we were supposed to fly down to California, you know, the whole crew, the whole band and crew, meet up with a tour bus. And instead we just drove some minivans down there and met up with the tour bus anyway. But things were very wild. I just remember it just like, yeah, what's going to happen? But like you said, things went back to normal. People were super nice to each other for quite a long time. And then that receded as well. And here we are. I have been kind of thinking about that too. When this first started, it was, okay, is this going to be like, do I need to like stock up on ammo like everybody else seems to be doing, that kind of thing? Remains to be seen, right?
Right.
But surely the music business, the entertainment business, the large crowd business is hugely affected, as is just about everything. But that's not going to be normal for years. But maybe someday it will be, like 2 years from now. Like, I just keep pushing it back. Like, it was like 1 year, okay, next year. And then that's like, okay, 2 years. Pretty soon it's going to be 5 years. But before you know it, things are going to slowly be changing as it is, and our habits are going to change, and we won't really notice that things are different anymore.
Well, as you said in the song, which I remember sort of having a bit of a resurgence then, you know, sort of tomorrow is another day. Like, it, you do get eventually the clock starts over and things change.
Yeah, I've got so many songs about that. Time Brings Change from our very first album. I think I wrote that song when I was probably 16, 17, something like that. I didn't know much, but I did understand that time brings change, the obvious ones. But I mean, that's the thing, is we all worry so much about this and that and that. But yet, when you just like look at your daily life, okay, don't look at your bills, but you're just daily life. You're going through life and it's fine, right? Like, you're just, you may be tired, you may be this or that, but it's when we really think about the things that are out of our control, the big pictures, that can get scary. I think about it, but I don't dwell on it. I really just think about what I'm going to be doing today and try to make sense of it all. So,
do you think, I mean, I was trying to think back to that show too, like, one of the opening acts was that band Mest, and I forget who the other one was, but it must be an interesting experience for you. I mean, you've been at this almost 30 years now. You've seen you've done so many tours. You've had so many opening acts. You've been the opening act so many times. You've seen so much come and go. Is there a part of you too that's just like, and there's this very stoic idea, Marcus does it in meditations over and over again, he just sort of like lists all the emperors that came before him, or he lists all the famous people that nobody's heard of anymore. Is there a part of you too that's just like been at this long enough, you just sort of have this almost philosophical view of how trends and events and moments come and go?
You know, I wish I was that smart, Ryan, but just like anything, I need reminders. I need markers in a lot of ways, because just like a set list, I kind of know the general ideas of this and that and that. But I don't always put it together the right way in the right order, and I get mixed up. And so I think having a set list, having an idea of, and to be honest, that can go out the window at any moment. So yeah. Like just understanding that, that's how I work best. Just having a few things written down, and by no means am I organized. I'm the worst organizer, but when I really have to do the deep work, like writing a song, coming up with ideas for a marketing campaign, things like that, sure, I can get it done. I can sit there and put pen to paper or fingers to a keyboard and make it happen. But I wish I was better.
Well, it's funny because there's a part, the role your band has played in my life has been a weird one because, like, for instance, I remember going to the Sunrise Mall in Sacramento and buying 10 Years and Running. I think that's what it's called. The Greatest Hits album.
Yep, that's it. Yep, 10 Years and Running.
And so, like, I remember thinking, like, 10 years, that's so long to do something because I was a teenager, although you were not that much older at the time. So that would have been, what, in 02? So, like, sometimes when, because we've become friends since, I think, like, and then it's like, okay, 2012, that's 20 years. And then it's almost like your band has been a measurement of time in my life just because of the round numbers of it. And I have certain memories of it. It's just 30 years is just such a long time to do something. It must in a way just kind of blur together, but also it must have gone by very, very quickly.
Yeah, all of those things for sure. And so we're 28 years now. And so 1992 was when we got together. And it was the year right before we went into 10th grade high school. And that's all I've known my whole adult life. We never quit. We, you know, there's been some lulls along the way. Definitely around the 2007 economic downturn, the music business was in the crapper. And I mean, we were still going, but it just wasn't as successful. It wasn't as big, you know? And so you just kind of like, you go on your first gear and you just kind of move along, but we made it happen. And we've gone through this boom, you know, the last decade or last 6 years, I would say, and it's not slowing down. Even, you know, we talked a couple of years ago and I was saying, you know, we've had this boom and it's still going. Like, we're number one on Spotify, a brand new song. A 28-year-old band has a brand new song from 2018. That's number one on our Spotify. Number one. Wow. And it's just insane. It's called Let's Ride. And
I love that song.
Yeah. I mean, it's a huge success for us. And just the fact that people want to listen to that more than they want to listen to Chick Magnet or Punk Rock Show, you know, and it was on the new Tony Hawk Pro Skater video game. So it's just had this sort of resurgence for us, and not even a resurgence. It's a new song, like I said.
Right.
So yeah, it feels is. Like it's not a real lie. Like, this is definitely some sort of, like, you know, some sort of a setup software program we're living in.
It's weird. Like, you'll hear sometimes, like, metal bands be like, oh, you know, the grunge years were rough. Like, you were just talking about the financial crisis, which is, like, in retrospect, a long time ago. And you'll the grunge years were rough. And you're like, that's almost 40 years ago. You know, like, it's 30 years ago. To just wrap your head around how long ago that was. But in their mind, they've just been, you know, like, it's hard for me even to wrap my head around that my first book came out almost a decade ago. Like, because you keep your head down, you do your thing, you're taking it one day at a time. And then, the years just pile up.
They fly by. Absolutely. I mean, that's the thing, is like, if everything's going, if time is moving really slow, you're not really doing anything, you know, because in my experience, when I've actually been busy, whether it's touring, writing, recording, when you're actually busy doing it, it goes pretty fast because it takes time. It just really does.
Right. Do you ever, thinking of all these bands that have come and gone, I'd always wondered, how did it feel for you sort of being early to the type of music you play, being in the scene with all these different bands? And then some of those bands for a brief period went on and were like some of the biggest bands in the world. Now it's evened out, obviously, and some of those bands no longer exist. So there's sort of a tortoise and the hare element to it. But like, how did you, I was always curious, like, how did you handle that? Was that
hard to swallow? Did it make you angry? Or was it something you were excited about for them? Like, how did you see your tour and you're doing your stuff? And then the next thing you know, somebody, you know, is like, you know, going from show to show in a private jet.
Well, that's an interesting question, because it's not really just one answer. I mean, they're thinking back, sure, there's jealousy. There's, I wonder why their song got big and not ours, or this or that. But I don't think there was ever any real animosity or jealousy or anything like super personal. It was more of a natural reaction, human reaction to, dang it, you know, like, but, you know, later on finding out there's so many reasons why certain bands got big and other bands didn't. And a lot of times it had nothing to do with the music. It had everything to do with the manager or the label or the decisions being made behind the scenes. So for me, we can go back and look at a million mistakes we made, but we can also look at, oh, wow, this is actually a pretty good thing that you did this, even though it seemed bad at the time, it actually led to this, this, this. And then here you are now, you know, with all the things you have. So it's easy for me to like play that Monday morning quarterback, but I also have to play it with the good things that have happened, because so many crazy good things have happened. But jealousy, all of that, the politics involved, I had no idea that there's actually, and I won't name any names, but like, well, actually I'll name this. This is something that happened to us, and it wasn't the band's fault, but at the time we were on tour and we were going to be on Jimmy Kimmel, and we were booked, ready to go. When we were going to play LA, we were going to get there a day early and do the show. Well, at the time, our record label wanted to sign another band that we were on tour with. They were called Brand New. And they instead called up whoever booked, you know, us on the Jimmy Kimmel show and said, hey, we got another band that we want to put in place of MXPX, Brand New. Can you do that for me? And of course they did it for him. Whatever you need, what, you know, all good.
Right.
And schmoozed them, did all the whole thing. Brand New didn't even end up signing to the label. So all these things are done, screws us. And it's like, and it wasn't, let's screw MXPX. It's like, let's just try to get what we want here.
Sure. You were expendable.
No matter what. Yeah. Yeah. So like that kind of stuff we found out about later, and that is disheartening. And is it something that made us mad? Absolutely. We were mad at the label about that. We weren't mad at Jimmy Kimmel. We weren't mad at Brand New. We were mad at the label. And after that record, we asked to be, you know, this is a mistake in my opinion, maybe not, but we asked to be let go. And so we gave up, I don't know, $500,000 or more just to get out of our contract. So yeah, there's a lot we did wrong, but there's a ton we did right. And looking back, it happened to so many other people, not just us, politics, the music business, all of this and that. But what it taught me, I guess, in the end is, you know what, you just got to do you, make decisions the best you can, and not dwell on the mistakes you made. Just learn from those and pay attention. Paying attention is huge. You'd be surprised.
No, it's something that I think causes me a lot of anxiety in the present moment, right? Like, you know, like currently because of COVID related stuff, but then also just, you know, mistakes that people have made. I'm like, got two of my books, which are selling well, I've run out of stock. And there's this, I think, this worry that like, each one of these things matters so much right now. And if, you know, like that, if this happens, then that happens, then you don't get this thing. Like, you know, you're going, we didn't get Kimmel, which meant we didn't get this, which meant, you know, you sort of extrapolate out all the things that it could mean. In retrospect, of course, I look back at all these moments or junctures where things got messed up or somebody forgot this or somebody actively screwed you. And you're like, it really didn't make a difference. But it's hard not to feel in the moment like it's almost like life or death for your career or something.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's unquantifiable because, I mean, all the things we do, you know, even just being on this podcast right now is probably unquantifiable.
Sure.
Because it may hit somebody in like 3 years, you know, so right. You can't really know all of the places you're making an impact or a negative impact, right? And so all you can do is just keep working and keep doing what you're doing. And lo and behold, you see the results. You know, you as a writer, I'm sure see that. But it's very similar for musicians. It's like a book or an album you put out may do really well right away and then go away, you know, and then not be sort of in the minds of the audience the way other albums or other books have been. And you're like, what did I do wrong here? Well, one, it's just the law of nature that not every album can be a smash. Not every right. Michael Jackson album was Thriller.
I've talked a lot about my morning routine here. One of the things I do every morning after I get up is I take a bunch of vitamins that my doctor recommended after some blood tests. I take a vitamin C, a zinc, a omega-3, and I take a couple others who I'm forgetting, but I definitely know whose vitamins I take. And they actually happen to be today's sponsor, and I've been taking them long before Thorne sponsored today's episode. Thorne takes a personalized, innovative, and scientific approach to health and wellness with all their supplements, and they've teamed up with leading medical professionals to bring out highly effective nutritional supplements. Because I'm a runner, I'm always trying to take care of my joints. And with Thorne, I never have to question what's in each supplement. Give your body what it really needs with Thorne. Go to thorne.fit/dailystoic and use code dailystoic for 10% off your first order. That's thorne.fit/dailystoic and use code dailystoic for 10% off your order. thorne.fit/dailystoic. Use code dailystoic. And note, these statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. There's a lot of things we know would be good for us. Problem is, we don't have time. It's just tougher. I think therapy is like that. We all know that sitting down, talking to someone, really working on our issues will make a difference. So the problem is finding a therapist, driving across town, all of that, right? And that's where Talkspace comes in, today's sponsor. Because by doing everything online, Talkspace has made getting the help you want easier, more accessible, and more affordable. With Talkspace, you can sign up online and get a personalized match with a provider that's right for you, typically within 48 hours. You can have virtual sessions with your licensed therapist from the comfort of your home. And Talkspace is secure and private, using the latest end-to-end grade encryption to store client information and complying with the latest HIPAA regulations. As a listener of this podcast, you'll get $80 off your first month with Talkspace when you go to talkspace.com/stoic and enter code SPACE80. To match with a licensed therapist today, go to talkspace.com/stoic and enter promo code SPACE80, that's 80, to get $80 off your first month and show your support for the show. That's talkspace.com/stoic, promo code SPACE80. How did you feel about it when you look back at your career? I mean, so early on, the sort of image of MXPX was like not quite a Christian band, but not quite a regular band. Whatever this weird ability or weird inability we have to sort of understand that, you know, however we seem to need to put bands in one box or another. But then that label seems to have fallen away, I guess. Do you, and I'm curious where you stand today, but two, do you think, Do you look back at that and think, I'm glad I identified as how I identified at the time? Or do you look back and go, I took, you know, maybe I inhibited my reach in some way? How do you think about that part of your career?
Well, you know, I grew up, you know, going to church and, you know, doing youth group. And that was sort of the world I lived in when I was young. And I certainly didn't understand press, and I didn't understand how to talk to the media, and the fact that it even mattered, not that it really does matter, but it kind of mattered. And they used my words out of context. I mean, that's, yeah, it's like 101, right? Of course, they're going to use your words out of context. I didn't realize that, you know, Yuri, our drummer, being talked to after our interview with Spin Magazine. And like, he was asking about like personal relationships and this and that. And like, Yuri not realizing that this is not off the record. You know, things like that.
Sure.
We didn't know any of that. So like so that mixed with being very naive about the world, things were a little weird for us for a while. People misunderstood what we were trying to do. And to be honest, what we were trying to do is just be ourselves, which right. We were trying to find. We were trying to figure out who are we as kids, as a band. We were always the younger kids there. So it was always like there was like a spotlight on us, and I rebelled that in a lot of ways. I rebelled and talked and had a lot of songs about anti-establishment, anti-religion, even though I was a practicing Christian at the time. And I think that's a natural thing to do as a teenager as well, is to rebel against what people are saying. You know, if a critic was going to write something in a magazine about me, I would get mad and write a song about it or something like that. Or the record label did something we didn't like, I would write a song about it. So like, it was like my weapon, you know, in some ways, naively, you know, and looking back, I don't regret writing those songs at all. But at the same time, would I write them now? No, I would probably think a little differently, be a little more measured, say it in a different way. And as far as where I'm at, I mean, I think, you know, I'm at the place where I respect all religions. I don't choose to follow one. So, yeah.
Right. It must have been weird too. Like you have this sort of identity or this thing that's a part of who you are, and because people are not good with nuance, it sort of maybe not gets inflated, but it becomes the thing by which you're known. Mm-hmm. And it's it's weird how timeless that struggle is, but it must have been frustrating.
Well, it was frustrating at first, and then I realized that's part of my story, and to not shy away from it. I absolutely embrace who I was and who I am now, and all the fans all along the way. You know, there's been millions, so they're all from different walks of life as well. Like, you can't pigeonhole an MXPX sure. fan as being this or that. I've truly met so many different types of people. So in that way, you know, you just kind of like knowing what you know about other people. Yeah, I feel like there's just nothing I can really do to fight that. So why fight it? I embrace it. I embrace the story. And if I wasn't in a good spot now, I would probably be in a much darker place. And as it is, as crazy as life is, and as happy as I am, it's still stressful. It's still hard to deal with the realities of what's going on in this country and all of that. But, you know, when I just think of my story, man, I've come so far and I've got so much further to go. And the fact that, you know, I can still write songs now and I feel like they're better than ever and different, you know, it's like, sure, somebody that doesn't like punk rock that listens to MXPX and listens to any one of our albums, you may go like, okay, that's pretty simplistic music here or there, or there or whatever. But like, that's fine, because to me, I always wanted to make the best simple music I possibly could.
Sure.
So for me, it was like the simpler, the better. If I can do it with doing less, that means that the thing that I'm choosing to be the hook of the song, the theme of the song, is that much stronger.
I think you get to a place too where at first you're like, I want to be for everyone. I want to be as big as possible. And mm-hmm. and obviously that, like, that's good as far as it goes. Like, if someone is starting their career and they're like, I don't want to please anyone, it's probably not going to work. But then you kind of get to a place where you go like, oh, no. Like, my main job is to make things for this audience that's true to who I am and true to the kind of connection or universe we've created together. If it attracts other people and brings them in, so be it. But you kind of have the, especially you after 30 years, it's like, you're not trying to make it on a top 40 radio station tomorrow with some trendy new song. You're trying to make MXPX songs, which is a sort of a universe you've created. It's like you're making another Star Wars movie because you created the Star Wars franchise. You know what I mean? Like, it's a universe.
That's a great analogy. I was going to ask, I mean, how old were you when you wrote your first book?
I think I wrote it when I was 23 or 24.
And then did you write anything when you were 16, 15, 16, 17?
I mean, I was mostly writing music. There's the joke that all authors wish they were musicians.
So let's get those songs. Let's find those songs and put those out to the world.
Let's definitely not. Actually, the worst part is, like, you know, at some point I took like everything I'd ever downloaded on the internet, put on my computer, and I like put it all on my phone at some point. And every once in a while I'll have like my phone on like shuffle, you know, and one of my own songs will come on. And it's just like the worst, most humbling thing you could imagine to just like, well, you can imagine it, but you're much better than me. But you hear something you did when you were 15 years old, like on a 4-track recorder in your garage, and you're like, ugh.
Oh my God. Yeah. We don't even need to get into 4-track recording, because I didn't understand at the time. Like, when I was a kid, I was putting together these recordings. I didn't realize that if you if you sing, it's going to sound exactly like how you sing. So what I thought was I could just sing quiet and then turn the volume up and it would be loud and sound good. But no, it just makes your really quiet singing sound loud and terrible. So I had a long way to go. And a lot of those things, I just learned from failing. You know, I learned from hearing it back and going, that sounds absolutely, what am I doing wrong? And not realizing, oh, you're singing quiet, dummy. So
no, I loved your point about, you know, you'd experience something and then write a song about it. To me, that's like, when I think about what made me become a writer, it was that I was having experiences that I could not explain. You know, it's like, you don't feel understood by your parents, or you feel like this is happening in the world and it pisses you off. The impulse, like an articulate, you know, sort of well-adjusted kid would just like say what they think, but it's your inability to do that that drives you to go spend hours in your room learning how to play the guitar, or in my case, reading books and learning how writing works. Like you, and that becomes the art becomes like your safe place. Like it doesn't matter what's happening in the world. It doesn't matter how mad I am or frustrated I am. I can go sit down on the computer and I am the master of that domain. You know what I mean? So yeah, that thing remains true and constant. And I got to imagine even after 30 years, that's true.
Oh, it's so true. I mean, it probably explains why I'm not a good talker, you know. Yes. And I can get good if I'm like talking a lot. And it's funny because I have a podcast as well, but it's true. It's like when I listen to myself talk, I'm like, what are you talking about half the time? but you know, making a song, sitting down with a guitar feels really good, really natural. It can change your mood. It's weird how I could be feeling one way in the morning. I just come over to the studio and be like, okay, I got to do this work, or even I got to do a podcast or this or that. I'll sit down with the guitar for just like 2 seconds and just strum it, sing for a second, not even do a whole song. When I put that guitar down, my mood, whatever it is, my being feels different. I feel different. And that is, I can't really explain that, but it's pretty cool. It's like a little,
no, it's like, imagine how awful your life would be if you had never discovered that outlet, like where you would have had to go to get that release.
Yeah. I mean, everybody's got whatever that is somewhere. Maybe they haven't found it yet though.
No, that's what I mean. I think for a lot of people it's drugs, or it's, you know, sex, or
it's unhealthy. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not a productive use. I mean, I heard this great thing from Tim Ferriss, which I think about, I think it defines what you're just talking about. His sort of rule is like, make before you manage. So that like every day you have to start with whatever the creative, like the making thing that you do is. You can't start the day with the bullshit. So for me, it's like, I always do the writing or the reading or the editing. I do that in the morning. I don't start, if someone's like, hey, we need to hop on the phone, I don't go like, all right, let's schedule that for 9 a.m. because that means I'm going to start my day with something that I don't like, that doesn't give me that purpose you're talking about. But if I flip it, if I sit and write for an hour first, I can put up with pretty much anything the rest of the day.
That is a cool way of putting it. And I don't really do that, like, because for me, it's hard for me to just like jump up. I'm with it. It's more of a scheduling thing for me, but I really feel like, one, I got to get off the phone in the morning, but that's usually what I'm doing. I'm like, okay, I'm checking my messages or da 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 that. But when I have, and I'm just thinking back a couple of weeks, when I have started writing, like say lyrics or something, first thing in the day, it's pretty cool because you feel like no matter what you've written, you feel like you've done something. You've done something actually worth doing. So I'm going to give that more thought. I generally write a lot at night. So
Yeah, musicians are weird cats. They're almost always night owls for some reason.
Yeah. So, but I do absolutely agree with what you're saying. Like just from a organizational standpoint, doing what you make first, that's going to be a lot more enjoyable.
So last question for you. One of the first Greek words I ever remember coming across is in your song, One Step Closer to Life. I think the lyric is the first step to Kairos is to take the shells out of your eyes. Yeah. I remember, this is obviously before rap genius or anything. Like, what would you have had to do? Probably read the liner notes of the album. But I remember being like, what the hell does that mean?
Yeah.
So what the hell does it mean?
So I was probably I used to read a lot. I still read a little bit, but I used to read a lot. And that's where I came up with these like words I would throw into songs. Like if some of my songs back in the day, you're like, this guy doesn't know what that word means. Like entropy or monogamy or, you know, something.
Compartmentalizing.
Something like
that. Am I remembering that in a song?
Yeah. I read that out of a book.
Okay.
It was like a philosophy art book about like the Western civilization and art and stuff like that. And it was like talking about compartmentalizing and marketing and all this stuff. And I'm like, okay. And I start writing, use these catchphrases. But, Kairos. Yeah. I think I was meaning it as enlightenment. Now
sure.
I know that I was probably reading a philosophy book. I was in debate. I was in, I was in a few other classes like that, like literature classes. So I probably honestly was just reading stuff and then writing songs and using that, which is, I guess, like, why should I be embarrassed? That's what you're supposed to do. Like,
no, of course.
You can't find words out of yourself if you haven't read anything or, you know, even I wouldn't necessarily read the dictionary, but I would collect books with interesting words. So like thesaurus books and things that had poems and just words that I wouldn't normally use. I would see how they were used. So like in the early days of songwriting, I did a ton of that.
And take the shells out of their eyes. What do you mean?
That's another reference to like philosophy and biblical reference kind of thing, where when you are being a hypocrite, a lot of times you're calling out somebody for something they're doing, but you've got shells on your eyes, meaning you're blinded and you like almost like similar to, I think there's a biblical reference to having a stick
sliver
in your eye. Yeah. A log in your eye rather than a sliver. Yeah. That kind of thing.
Right. Oh, okay.
So,
I get it.
So I take these like ideas and I kind of like make my own way to say it.
No, I mean, I love that song. And I think it's a great example, Austin Kleon's book of Steal Like an Artist. I think people don't realize that really what you're doing as an artist is you're picking up little things here or there and combining them in new ways. And that's how you create something new. This isn't just like visited upon you from the muses or something.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing. It's like when you read, when you consume things, even watching movies. I mean, I've got a lot of songs that have movie quotes in them or little bits from an idea from a movie or, you know, like
sure.
A little line, things that make me laugh, things that are funny. I'm like, oh my God, can I somehow fit this into this song? You know? So
yeah.
there's a new song called Friday Tonight. It's on our self-titled album and it's a good song. It's just a song, but if you really pay attention to it, you're like, oh, that's a quote from the movie Friday, the actual Friday movie
right.
with Chris Tucker. And anyway, and people obviously kind of like caught, you know, picked up on that after it was out for a little while. Cause there's a part that's like, I'm in the kitchen, you're in the
yeah.
kitchen, in the goddamn refrigerator. So, I mean, it's like a direct line, but
sure.
the way I sing it has nothing, like you wouldn't even think Friday. So
no, I love that. I think that's what keeps that the work has to be interesting to you too. And sometimes those inside jokes and like little things are what keep you going.
I think so. I mean, it doesn't hurt. That's for sure.
Mike, this was amazing. Thank you so much. And of course, thanks for all the music over the years.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
If you're liking this podcast, we would love for you to subscribe. Please leave us a review on iTunes or any of your favorite podcast listening apps. It really helps. And tell a friend. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Daily Stoic early and ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen early and ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts.
Okay, so if you had a time machine, how far in time would you need to go back to be a dominant basketball player of that era?
I need to go to when Bob Cousy was playing.
Back in the plumber days?
27-year-old Shea would give Bob Cousy the f***ing business. He's not guarding me.
Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano, and we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the best.
Each week, Shay and I are combing through all of the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling ones, and then handing out six pop culture-themed trophies for six basketball-related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some, But You Just Lost One trophy. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to Six Trophies ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.